soul to soul, and spirit to spirit. Blessings. Now, this talk today may make you a little uncomfortable. It may open up a realm in which you lose yourself, your false self. We are told in Revelation that everything will be shaken out of its place, and that just may happen today. I'm going to read to you a couple of excerpts from The Thunder of Silence, the chapter This is a Spiritual Universe, and Realization of Oneness, the chapter No And. So if you've never seen this chapter, This is a Spiritual Universe, in The Thunder of Silence, Joel starts us off with a little story about several years ago. I was on my way to South Africa, and I stopped off for a day in the Belgian Congo. And he talks about giving his baggage to a young boy who took it out to the plane. And when he asked him if it was okay, the young boy said okay. Well, when he got to his destination, there was no baggage. Everybody looked everywhere, and they couldn't find it. And we'll pick the story up here, where it says, "For 3 weeks I was in South Africa without baggage and without money, without purse and without scrip. But this was no great hardship because I ate regularly, my hotel bills were paid, and clothing was purchased, although only the absolute necessities, because I was convinced that my bags would show up, which was a very wrong conviction. 2 nights before I was to leave for India, I sat down to give this whole incident some serious consideration. This represents a failure on my part. What is that failure? What has gone wrong here?" So you have Joel, who's in the Belgian Congo, and he is traveling and visiting Kruger National Park, and the students there are paying his hotel bills and paying for his meals and some clothing, because his baggage hasn't shown up, and so he has no money, he has no clothes. But he's certain that they're going to show up. He just knows it. How can anything be lost? In God, it can't be lost. And yet he's going to leave for India within 2 nights. It's been 3 weeks now. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. I know we often come to that same conclusion. I do. Something's wrong. Why is this problem still here? And that's where he is when he goes to his hotel room before going to sleep, and he decides to take a serious look at it. All right, now listen. "As I sat in my room, pondering and meditating, finally the answer came. This is a spiritual universe, and yet here I am waiting for baggage, when the truth of the matter is, there isn't any baggage. All that baggage is a part of a belief of time and space. Space occupied by baggage, time in which it could be lost, and space in which it could be lost. Here we are trying to find baggage, which, if it were found, would only be an evidence that the human scene had been manipulated. There is no truth to this whole picture because we are living in a spiritual universe where nobody has any baggage. Whatever there is of reality, or the real universe, is incorporeal, spiritual, and omnipresent. whatever appears as baggage in time and space must be an image in thought, and has no reality to it. So I have been fooled into hoping and waiting for material baggage, which has no reality to it, to turn up in a spiritual universe, where every idea is omnipresent. And with that, I retired. Now, that's only two paragraphs, and yet in those two paragraphs, he explains the entire secret to spiritual living and spiritual healing. What if you substituted person or humanhood? Let's substitute person and see how that reads. This is a spiritual universe where the truth of the matter is there is no person. All that person is a part of the belief of time and space. Whatever there is of reality, which is not person, is incorporeal, spiritual, and omnipresent. Whatever appears as person must be an image in thought and can have no reality to it. Now, after his realization, he says the story came to a quick conclusion. This story, he says, illustrates a very important point. Well, the conclusion was that the station manager found his baggage in with the airline pilots. The baggage was sitting there at the hotel all the time through those 3 weeks. So his realization of the unreality of baggage resulted in harmony. But let's get to the principle here. This story illustrates a very important point or principle in spiritual living and healing. In metaphysics, we would think, oh, well, it has to turn up, it can't be lost. In other words, we would be dealing with an it called baggage. The fallacy of this method of meeting a problem is immediately apparent because in the case of illness, in order to be consistent, we would have to give a treatment to an it, to a heart, a liver, a lungs. Most of us know not to treat people by name, and we know enough not to treat hearts, livers, and lungs. But just see how easily we can be fooled into looking for baggage. We become very sure of ourselves and believe that we are going along in the right direction, and then all of a sudden the hypnotism of human sense can make us think about baggage or the lack of it. Now, the hypnotism of human sense means the mental image produced by what you hear, see, taste, touch, and smell. That's the human sense. They produce a mental image. And the mental image is not reality. All right, so he says, please understand me, I was not concerned about the loss of my baggage. My mistake was that I was sure it would turn up, which is exactly like being sure that a person's heart is going to heal or his foot is going to get better. But the principle upon which all our work is based, all our work in the infinite way is based, is that of the real creation as recounted in the first chapter of Genesis, in which God made all that was made, and all that he made is good. The spiritual creation of God is an incorporeal creation. Those seven words are the principle itself. We've talked a lot about Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, and perhaps it wasn't understood very well. But this is the secret. This is the whole secret, because he says the principle upon which all our work is based is that of the real creation. And the real creation, the spiritual creation, is an incorporeal creation. I've looked up that word incorporeal. Have you ever looked it up? Merriam-Webster says incorporeal means without a material body or form. Now here is Joel Goldsmith, one of the greatest healers of all time, a transparency for Christ, saying all of his work is based on the principle that the real creation of God, the spiritual creation, is incorporeal creation. So God's creation, God's perfect creation, is incorporeal, invisible, without a material body or form. All right, that should give you enough to meditate on for the next year. But let's look at a couple more places here. Down a couple of paragraphs, he says, I also know that most of the time our concept of body seems real, because one thing or another brings it into our awareness, and because of that, there is the temptation to think of it as real. Now, there you go. You could put body back here, too, couldn't you? You could substitute the word body over here. This is a spiritual universe, and yet here I am waiting for a healthy body, when the truth of the matter is there isn't any material body. Body, all that body is a part of the belief of time and space. Space that is occupied by body, time, in which it could exist or get healthy. You could substitute anything in there that you're trying to fix. And he says there is no such thing as a material body. Well, that's pretty plain, don't you think? We might all discuss amongst ourselves whether we believe that there is an illusion or not. And yet he says right here, there is no such thing as a material body. There's no such thing as material baggage. The real creation is an incorporeal creation. There is no such thing as a material body. There is only a material concept of body. There is no such thing as a material universe. There are only material concepts of the one incorporeal, invisible spiritual universe. So there you have it, about as plain as the nose on your face, as the back of your hand. There is no such thing as a material universe. Therefore, there are only material concepts of the one invisible, incorporeal, spiritual universe. Therefore, if you can see it, hear it, taste it, touch it, or smell it, you are looking at a concept, a mental image, which was not made by God. Because the creation of God is incorporeal, invisible, spiritual universe. Well, let's look at a couple more places. As long as we accept a material concept of the universe, we are under the laws of matter. But we are free as soon as we begin to understand that we live and move and have our being in the first chapter of Genesis, which he has told us is an incorporeal creation. Therefore, reading those two lines, we learn, if we live in a material concept, you see, there is no material universe. If you're seeing one and you're living one in one, you're living in a concept, a mental image. But you're not living in a material universe. You're only living in a material concept. Because the real universe is the spiritual universe, and it's the only universe there is. You're entertaining a mental image. And if you're entertaining a mental image, according to what he just said here, you come under the law of karma, or good and evil. But you are free. The moment, or as soon as, you begin to live and move and have your being in the first chapter of Genesis, where man is made in the image and likeness of God, or spirit. So, you're going to have to come into the conscious awareness of an incorporeal spiritual creation in which you live, an invisible universe, the only real universe. You're going to have to come out from under this concept, this mental image you're entertaining of a material universe. And when you do, you will have overcome death. Nothing can die in a spiritual universe. He says that later in this chapter. No one has ever died in the kingdom of heaven. But every day someone dies in this material concept. How many years do you want to live in a material concept and call it life? How many more years do you want to go? How many more lives do you want to spend living out your existence in a material concept which has no reality? Jesus told us outright, God is a spirit. And then he turned around and called that spirit your father and my father. Now, if God is a spirit, and God is my father, I am spirit. All right, to continue, dropping down a little bit, he says here, in times of problems, to understand what body is and what this universe is to arrive at a realization that would bring harmony. And then he tells you what it is. I live and move and have my being in God. I am in my Father, and my Father is in me. How can I be finite, or material, or limited? If an infinite Father is within me, how can a finite, limited being have an infinite God within him? Well, of course he can't. Therefore, I must be as spiritual as the Father that created me. All being must be spiritual, and into this spiritual creation, nothing finite can enter to limit or create any sense of separation. The suffering of this world is due to our looking around for material baggage, even expecting it to be in its rightful place. That is the error. There is no place for any he, she, it, or me. Well, that's pretty plain, isn't it? You must be infinite spirit. If you and the Father are one, Again, on the next page, he says, nothing occupies time or space but our mental images. And the reason they do is because we accept the belief in yesterday, today, and tomorrow. But the minute we rise above the mental realm of life, we shall perceive that there is no such thing as time. Well, now that's pretty plain, isn't it? Here he tells us, if you can see it, hear it, taste it, touch it, or smell it, if it's taking place in time and space, it's nothing but a mental image. And then he says, the reason why you see that mental image is because of the belief in time. And yet there's a way to rise above the mental image and perceive that there is no such thing as time. So now he said, in just a little story in a couple pages about South Africa and losing some luggage, he has told us that that which takes place in time and space is a mental image. If you can see it, hear it, taste it, touch it, or smell it, it's a mental image and was not made by God. And furthermore, there is no such thing as time in which that it can exist. So if you see it, hear it, taste it, touch it, smell it, or think it, or it takes place in time or space, it's a mental image, a nothingness. Well, that pretty much is this entire world and everyone in it. But if you can rise above it, then you can perceive there's no such thing as time. There is an eternal now in which you exist as an infinite spirit in the creation of the Father. Now that's what he did every time he sat down to meditate. He didn't sit down to meditate to heal people. He says so right here. He says that doesn't work if you sit down to try to heal a person or fix their heart or liver or lungs. He tells us that. Never did he sit down to heal someone. When someone presented him with a discordant picture or problem, he disregarded it entirely because he knew, as quick as he could, that if it takes place in time and space, this is another mental image. And what can I do about a mental image? What should be done about a mental image? Nothing. It's a nothing. You're not supposed to be working around with mental images. And so I dropped that. That's what he did. He dropped it. Instantaneously, he turned. How many times has he told us that? Instantaneously turn from the picture. It's only a mental image. Do not try to improve it. Simply drop it. Recognize its nothingness. Now, recognize that this mental image belongs to no one. It's impersonal. Recognize there's no reality in it, therefore it's nothingness. Now, he turned within. In the silence of his being, the mental images came to a stop. Lifted up above those mental images, he perceived something of the real, invisible, incorporeal spiritual creation, the infinite, invisible spiritual being, God as infinite individual spiritual being. He rested in that until he perceived it, felt it, or realized it. Then he stayed with it for a little while, opened his eyes, and went on about his day. And somehow, by making contact, by perceiving, by having the inner realization of the real creation, the mental images were dissolved. You know, the light shines, the darkness disappears. You can try that little experiment in the middle of the night with a flashlight, and you'll see it works. Just hit that switch over there on the wall, and the darkness disappears. The inner realization, the actual catching the feel of it, perceiving it, the real creation of God, the infinite invisible incorporeal creation, the infinite invisible spiritual self, the feel of that is the light shining. At that point, all you have to do is rest. The light is shining. The light of that Christ self dissolves the mental images. You are not to work on the mental image. You are simply to realize, as he told us over and over again, he gave it other names too. He gave it hypnotism or mesmerism or appearance. I like mental image, so I'm going to use that. We are not to work on the mental image. There's nothing to be done about it. There's no answer to that in that direction. We are to go within, come up over that through silence. Silence is the key. When you attain the silence, whether through contemplation leading up to that place of no more thoughts, or whether you're able just to turn within and become still instantaneously, the silence is the key. When you have the silence, you are now above the mental images. There you can perceive the real creation, the presence of the only self that God created. Because here is the secret, another secret. God created only one Son. And in your meditation, coming up over the mental image, you rest as you feel that one Son, the true self, the only self, in that spiritual creation, incorporeal, invisible, yet in your midst. Feeling that, the light of the Christ dissolves the mental image. And you open your eyes and harmony appears, and people say, how marvelous a healing. It wasn't that at all. Not at all. It's just that when the light shines, the darkness disappears, and more of the reality that is really there is apparent. Only a little more, still more. And more as you do this, more and more of the unreality, the mental images, will dissolve, and more of reality will appear. And you'll call that a life that is coming into harmony with divine being. All right, let's look at just a little more. Here it is in his words. When we achieve complete quietness and peace, the mind is no longer functioning. We have transcended mind and risen into the atmosphere of spirit, in which we are receptive and responsive to what God imparts. As soon as we become unattached, that is, as soon as we are detached from thought, from hate, fear, or love of objects or people, so that they can float in front of our eyes with the utmost indifference, then we are no longer in the realm of the mind. We are then reaching, touching, or being touched by our own soul, which is God. We are in an atmosphere where, when God speaks, we hear Him. When God utters His voice, the earth melts, and all problems dissolve. Now see, that's exactly what we just said, isn't it? That's exactly what we just said. And notice that he says you have to become unattached to all these mental images. You know, we want to have our cake and eat it too, and we can't do that in the spiritual life. This is an all-or-nothing deal. So, you can't look into the spiritual creation, the real creation. You can't rise above the mental image of a material person while at the same time you're loving them or clinging to them or hanging on to them. I'm sorry, but you have to leave all in order to follow me. So we have to recognize that if we can see it, hear it, taste it, touch it, or smell it, if we can see them, hear them, taste them, touch them, or smell them, it is a mental concept. I know he's told us, I read where he said, if we would know anybody, we have to disregard everything we've ever known about them, come into meditation and say, okay, God, who is this really? And if we do that, we'll see the reality of them, which is the spiritual creation, this infinite, incorporeal, invisible self. If you're going to walk the spiritual way, you have to be willing, as he says in the Infinite Way, to rise above both the human good and the human evil. They're both mental images. There is no human. All right. Now let's look at the same thing said to us in the Realization of Oneness in the chapter, No God And. There is no God and anything. Okay, let's look at it. Now in this chapter, he's calling it hypnotism. In the Thunder of Silence, it was mental image. That's the same thing, just a different term. Doesn't matter what term you give it, he says, so long as you recognize it's impersonal and it's nothingness. So let's take his term here, hypnotism. But realize he's also talking about mental images. The moment you see God and, you are hypnotized. The moment you see a mortal, if you see a mortal, any mortal anywhere, you are hypnotized. The moment you see a material world, you are hypnotized. From then on, there is no possible way to get rid of the appearance. That is why, with all the advances made in materia medica, in the medical world, everybody still dies because everybody who is born must die. They do and they will. Now that's an important sentence. If you are living as a mortal in a material world, that is a world made of matter, in which you see other mortals, be assured those mortals you see will die, and you will die. Why? Because you were born. That mortal was born. However, he tells us in his other writings, we have a choice. We can die that way, or we can die by consciously setting that existence aside and coming into the actual feel, the deep realization of our incorporeal spiritual self. Now, if you're standing in that self that was never born and cannot die, who is there to die? Who is there to be born? No one. You've overcome the cycle. All right. Getting back to this chapter. If you can agree that there is God, which means that you accept an infinite power of good, certainly then you must be able to understand there cannot be error, disease, or death. In fact, In fact, not since time began has there ever been a single death in the kingdom of God. Now that's kind of strange, isn't it? We see people die every day. Now I ask you, he's given it right here, but I ask you to ponder that. If you go into your meditation and come up over the mental images, if you are standing in that invisible, incorporeal, spiritual self in the real creation of God, that place where no one ever dies, because no one is ever born, can there be a death in your experience, whether your death or someone else's? The only way to be dehypnotized, he says, that is from these mental images, which are appearing as a material world or a mortal person, is to quiet the senses, to be still inside, and then spiritual awareness reveals the truth of being, which enables you to see that which is not visible. It enables you to hear that which is not audible. It enables you to know that which is unknowable with the human senses. Now that's a real experience. That's not just poetic talk. But, he says, no one will ever be able to understand this invisible, incorporeal, spiritual universe until he develops the inner spiritual consciousness, that which is called Christ consciousness. All right. How could Jesus make the statement, "Thou couldst have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above"? It was only because he had the inner vision to see through to something beyond what the eyes and ears could see and hear. He knew something that the human being could not know. And he proved it. He proved he was standing in that invisible spiritual creation. He proved he was dwelling in his infinite spirit self when he allowed himself to be crucified. They could crucify him, but they could not kill him. The crucifixion and the nails had no power. All right? So now, let us suppose you take this seriously, and you decide, I am going to overcome this world. I now know how. There's no world to overcome. I must overcome the mental images appearing as a world. I must come up over the mental images. I must still the senses. In my meditation, I must step into this invisible spiritual kingdom, which is right here in my midst, all the time, eternally right here in my midst. I must perceive, feel, get the inner deep realization of my own spiritual presence, God itself as my individual being, standing in the eternal, perfect spiritual creation. Let us suppose you go farther than that realization and you actually do attain it, the conscious awareness of it, and you stand in it. Well, according to this, if you do that, you could even allow yourself to be crucified because you could not die ever again. The crucifixion would have no power over you because you would be standing in another dimension. All right. Now, to read a little more, here he says, the world misunderstands the meaning of the word sin. Sin is really, and this is in italics, so he considers it important. Sin is really the acceptance of a material universe. Now that's all of it, folks. That's every bit of it. Look around. If you're seeing a material universe, if you're hearing one, if you're smelling, tasting, touching one, you're sinning. You're missing the mark. He says here, just going back to the belief that there are human beings is sin. Now, folks, how can you read that and not hear it? How can you read that and not hear it? If you see a human being anywhere, and if you love that human being, or if you see a bad human being and you hate that human being, or if you see a frightening human being and you are afraid, you fear that human being. If you love, hate, or fear anything in a material world or anyone in a material world, you're missing the mark. You're going to have to be born and die. And be born and die. You're going to have to experience good and evil, which makes up the mental concepts. Over and over and over. You have the choice. Jesus the Christ gave you the choice when he outlined how, and proved it in front of our eyes, how to come up over and out of this world of mental images into the inner invisible incorporeal spiritual creation. All right, a couple more things from here. Okay, here he gives you a challenge. On the next page, he says, meditate on this idea of hypnotism or mental images as the substance of every form of the mortal or material universe that is appearing to you. Now here's the part that we don't like. It all has to go. Evil or good are both mental images. And so he tells us, when you see sin, disease, lack, and limitation, remember, it is hypnotism presenting itself to you as what is called evil form. But, now listen to this, I know you don't like this, but it must be faced. When you see beauty around you, the mountains, ocean, sunshine, flowers, remember that these two are forms of hypnotism. Only this time appearing to you as good forms. Now we don't like to hear that. We want to have our cake and eat it too. Somehow we want to leave this world and yet hang on to the good. Both sides of duality are still mental images, whether evil or good. Both have to be overcome. You will never be able to heal unless you can overcome them both. All right. Now, this is important here. He says, this does not mean that we are not to enjoy the good of human existence, but we are to enjoy it for what it is, not as something real. No, we enjoy the forms of good, knowing them to be temporary forms, not something to be stored up. And then we go on each day letting the manna fall afresh. All right. So you're perfectly free to go on a vacation on a cruise line, sit out on the chase lounge, enjoy the breeze flowing across your body, and the dip into the pool, and the club soda and club sandwich that the waiter brings to you as you're laying next to the pool. You're perfectly free to enjoy that, as long as you continue to look into the invisible and realize this too is a part of the hypnosis. There is an invisible, incorporeal, spiritual creation. And that is appearing to me as this enjoyment. But the enjoyment in and of itself is not real. It's the invisible that is appearing as this that is the reality. Then you're perfectly free to enjoy it because you won't become attached to it. It can come or go, as he says. Now, he says elsewhere in this book, The Thunder of Silence, it's true that in following this way of life, you have to give up some of the good experiences or the good that you've been attached to. But in giving that up, you are more than compensated by being able to become free from disease and pain and lack and limitation. And furthermore, he says, the internal joys, the internal peace and love and fulfillment makes up for anything you have ever had to let go of. So, we are either going to step out of this world, or we're going to try to have one foot in that world and one foot in this world and somehow hang on to the good here and somehow get, you know, it's not going to work. We have to die completely. He says we have to lay the axe at the root of the tree. So, if you see lack limitation, remember it's hypnotism. But when you see beauty all around, mountains, ocean, and sunshine, that too are forms of hypnotism. As you go further in this work, and through your meditation, are able to rise to a point where you are above this world, or above the belief in a mortal, above the belief in a material universe, above the mental concept appearing as evil, or above the mental concept appearing as good. When you do that, he says, then you will know me as I am. Now that's Christ talking to you, the same as it talked to Peter. Who do you say that I am? Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Flesh and blood has not revealed that to you. The senses haven't revealed that to you. That's not a mental image. No, the Father in heaven, the Father within you has revealed that to you. That's what he's saying right here. As you work with these principles and you go further, and through meditation are able to rise to the point where you are above the mental images which appear as this world, then you will know me as I am. That is how healings take place. All right. You see, it has nothing to do with demonstrating a healthy heart or demonstrating harmony out here or demonstrating anything. It has to do with your ability to set aside the mental images, to come up over that into a place of stillness where you perceive, where you feel, where you have the realization of the actual, eternal, spiritual creation and of your infinite, incorporeal self. That is how healings take place. That's what he just said. Now, here's a couple important points here in the same chapter. He says, Those who are reading or studying truth, or who are using truth for healing supply or some other purpose, will find that the more their minds are fixed on getting rid of the condition or on getting a healing, the more are their minds in the hypnotism. Sure, you're trying to fix a mental image. You're not supposed to be working in that direction. He says you must see there is no human demonstration to make. All right, that's pretty plain. I have that underlined and starred. There is only one demonstration, and that is gaining this inner realization of the Spirit of God, of your true identity, of the spiritual creation. Now, when you really know and believe that, not just believe these words, when you really are practicing that and having those realizations of that invisible presence, you will no longer have to study truth, because the only purpose in studying truth is to learn that hypnotism is the only error. When you have learned that, there's nothing more to study. The rest is to be lived within your own being. All right? And a couple of pages over, still in the same chapter, no and. Hypnotism is just as much hypnotism, or a mental image is just as much a mental image, when it appears as good as when it appears as evil. When you can come into a state of consciousness, however, where you can look at the harmonious human appearances and recognize it as hypnotism or appearance, and when you can look at the inharmonious or discordant human picture and recognize it as the product of the same hypnotism or appearance, then you have arrived at a point in consciousness in which you will not try to improve, heal, correct the erroneous picture. Nor will you experience undue satisfaction over the harmonious picture. That is because you will know through your spiritual discernment that regardless of the picture or the appearance, right there is spiritual reality. In other words, you will look through that and perceive, actually perceive, spiritual reality and harmony, right there, eternal and immortal being. And with the ability to refrain from all attempts to correct or heal or improve, you will demonstrate the consciousness of God's allness. And there you go. Both of them have to go. And finally, the last paragraph, when you have become accustomed to the idea of observing the harmonious human appearances and the inharmonious human appearances with the same degree of unconcern, you will know that you have now arrived at a state of spiritual consciousness, and you will finally be able to see that which is invisible, to hear that which is inaudible, and to know that which is unknowable. You will have attained Christ consciousness. Now, those two books expand on the first paragraph in the New Horizon. The sense which presents pictures of discord and inharmony, disease and death, is the universal mesmerism. Now, see, he was calling it in one book mental images. He was calling it in another book hypnotism. Here he calls it universal mesmerism, which produces the entire dream of human existence. That means all of human existence is a dream. It's not something out here. No illusion is externalized. Please stop thinking there is a world that's an illusion. There isn't. Get it into your meditation. There is no external world that's an illusion. You are standing in the perfect spiritual creation. It's the only universe. This is a spiritual universe, a spiritual world. And in it is your infinite incorporeal spiritual self. the pictures that you see of a world are called universal mesmerism. It's a dream. It's a mental concept which you're entertaining, and it is in the mind, not outside of it. So it must be understood that there is no more reality to the harmonious human existence than to discordant world conditions. It must be realized that the entire human scene is mesmeric suggestion, and we must rise above the desire for even good human conditions. You see that? And he said it in three different ways, in three different books. Understand fully that suggestion, mesmerism, hypnotism, mental images are the fabric of the whole mortal universe, and human conditions of good and evil are dream pictures with no reality or permanence. So be willing for the harmonious as well as the inharmonious conditions of mortal existence to disappear from your experience. Then you may know reality. Or he says here, in order that reality may be known and enjoyed and lived. Because above this sense life, there is a universe of spirit. This world is real and permanent. Its substance is eternal consciousness. All right? Well, there's three ways of saying the same thing, which is, if you can see it, hear it, taste it, touch it, or smell it, you're standing in a mental image. You're not living at all. You're dead, the walking dead. If you love it, if you love him, if you love her, and that him or it or her is material, is matter, you are stuck in a false creation. Not a creation out here, a series of mental images. In another place he called them deceptive states of thought. You might as well just bundle it all up and call it whatever feels right to you. You can pick hypnotism, mesmerism, appearance, mental images, which I like, or illusion. But it's all taking place in the mind. So if you see in it a him or a her that you love, that you fear, that you hate, recognize all of this is taking place in the mind, a series of mental images. No such world exists. But you'll never know it. You'll never wake up out of that being deaf, dumb, and blind unless you learn how to go within and become quiet. If you haven't learned how to go within and either contemplate till you reach that point where thinking comes to a stop by itself, or you haven't learned the way to go within and become quiet and still just by resting back, then if you want to awaken out of being deaf, dumb, and blind, you're going to have to learn how to do that. So you're going to have to go back to the talks and the teachings and the tapes and the books that show you how. Let's not pretend. If you go into meditation and you're not rising up over the mental images to a place of stillness where you actually have, now listen, you really perceive it, you feel it, you sense it, you know this inner spiritual self, this incorporeal, invisible presence, this incorporeal spiritual creation, in which I and the Father are one being, if you actually perceive that, you will awaken from the dream to the reality, well, what he calls the first chapter of Genesis, to the reality of the spiritual universe, the spiritual life, the spiritual laws, the spiritual freedom in and as Christ. If you can't do that, go back and find out what you missed, because your awakening is dependent on your ability to do that. If you can't find the answers there, ask questions. If no one seems to have your answer, go within. That's the best place to go. Ask the Father, show me how to meditate. I never learned. I need to know. I want to know you aright, which means eternal life. Because when I know you aright, I will be able to step into that invisible eternal life. All right, I'll leave you with one last thought. We think of ourselves as people. We've been conditioned to do that throughout our life. Many years, maybe many centuries, we think of ourselves as people. You're a person. You feel yourself as a person. Now look at this. Take this into your meditation. Look at it deeply. We have just discussed that everything we see, hear, taste, touch, and smell are mental images. Right? We know, and we have been told and taught, they are impersonal. There is no person connected to them. They're just floating out of the universal belief in two powers. So we have these mental images appearing, but they're not personal. They're impersonal. They're not yours. They're not mine. They're just mental images. Impersonal mental images without God. Nothingness. All right? Okay, now let's look at Christ. Christ, we know, is this invisible, incorporeal, impersonal presence. It's not attached to a person in any way. It's infinite. It's omnipresent. So if the mental image, the illusion, is impersonal, and there's no person, and Christ is impersonal, infinite, omnipresent, and there's no person, who is the person? Where is the person? The illusion is impersonal. The reality is impersonal. Where is the person? There is none. There is none. That is a mental image. Now go within. Be still. Let God reveal what you really are, who you really are, where you really are. Let God reveal what you are. God the Father is God the you. God is a spirit. You must be spirit. But you don't know what that means. So throw out that mental concept of what that means. There is no person. You are spirit. What is that? Oh, Father, what am I? Reveal what I am. Let me be still. Let me be quiet enough to hear, to perceive. Father, what am I?